Welcome to Artery with Isa Caveggia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In each episode of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist specializing in a particular cultural context has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of authorship and responsibility in art. In this episode, Hermione Spriggs, an anthropologist at University College London, who is herself an artist, speaks with Tukuldur. I will now hand over to Hermione to introduce herself and her guest. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to this conversation between myself, I'm Hermione Spriggs, and the artist Tukuldur Yondonjamps. To briefly introduce myself, I'm an artist and a researcher. I'm currently based at University College London, where I'm working between the Department of Anthropology and the Slade School of Fine Art, doing practice-based PhD research. But I initially got to know Tukuldur through a project that I curated and produced together with Rebecca Empson called Five Heads. Five Heads, a Mongolian Kavan Polgoy, is Mongolia's largest coal mine, but in the context of our project, it also refers to five collaborative exchanges between artists and anthropologists who were exchanging ideas and materials to collectively reflect on the status of being Mongolian in the context of the boom and bust mineral economy there. So yes, Tukuldur was one of the artists who we invited to work on this project in collaboration with anthropologist Rebecca Plucan. And Tukuldur's work I've always found incredibly impressive and inspiring, I think primarily due to the energy and the sort of off-the-wall obsession that it captures, but also for his incredibly light and graceful way of moving between mediums of sculpture and painting, research, drawing, performance and film. And also due to the sense that I get that his work is indelibly linked to his very particular mode of inhabiting and moving through and also actively creating a version of the world that he wants to live in. I'll leave it to Tukuldur himself to introduce you to that world. But briefly, just to note a couple of things he's been involved in recently. He recently had a solo show titled Separated Geography from a Poem at Indiana University in Indianapolis. His work was featured in the Grand Jew Biennial of 2021. And his work is also on the cover of a recent edited volume titled Deterritorializing the Future. Hello, Tukuldur.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
Good, good. Lovely to see you.
Where am I talking to you from? Are you in New York?
Yes, I am in Harlem currently, yeah. I'm gonna be here in general for longer term, I think, yeah. I just arrived, in the States in September.
What are you working on? What's going on at the moment? Why are you in New York?
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm in New York, I'm in Harlem, and I'm working mostly collecting some pictures. I'm taking pictures from the streets, and then I will work with that information in a way. But I actually starting a new kind of body of work, but the idea was actually came back in 2013 or something, as I was back in New York. So I mean, the idea is very related to in this city, and then somehow I wanna finish and make a kind of suit or costume first, and then I'm like right now collecting or taking a lot of pictures on the streets. Yeah,
that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you, was how in your work in particular, which is so multifarious in the sense that you work with drawing and sculpture, film performance. You inhabit suits that are textile works in their own right. And somehow all of this fits together to create these bodies of work, which is so specifically you, and also take you on journeys. And I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about how ideas form and then travel and take form for you. Like, where does it all begin?
I think the mostly ideas come from if I visit certain sites. I mean, I was born in Ulaanbaatar city, and then I also grew up there. But then visiting in a way the countryside of Mongolia as a child, it was a quite rare things where my parents would me take to relatives, and then just having like seeing nomadic lifestyle. So it seemed like there were like two worlds always. It was the city where I go to school, and then how I learn history. I went to Russian school, so it was in a way history taught by Russian teachers. So there was a specific kind of direction of that education compared to countryside or to people where they have actually the other stories in a way. So there've been always these type of places. So because I grew up in the city, my interest, I mean, if I would visit places that would be very rare memories or rare kind of like a site activate certain ideas, I would say. The city, I mean, Ulaanbaatar was also very strange in terms of ideas, because I used to walk to school crossing railroad, and early mornings the trains would be like changing its places, and then somehow I kind of like having this like Russian filmmakers type of scenery, like kind of like crossing railroads, like kind of this visual information kind of stuck in my head. And then afternoon, if I would go from school to home, the sunlight will be be on the railroad, and then it seems like kind of like laser lines or something like very, I don't know if it's futuristic or not, but they've been like very strong visual information, stay from each site in a way. So it is the way how I memorize or visit places, and then of course there are all places they have very interesting parts, and then they all leave very strong visual kind of like memory or like that. And I think that is particularly the kind of origin of my work. So visit places, I would say, in particular in New York, I know that what I wanted to do, but I didn't really finish what I started in back in many years ago. So right now I'm in excited mode where I, doing pictures, photographs, and then so kind of activating my memory from that time and turning into body work. Yeah.
It makes sense that your work is catalyzed by places.
Yeah.
Do you, the current project that you're working on, is that collaborative at all?
I have a very good friend, or friends actually, Dan Bushwick, and they actually came several years ago back to Mongolia and then in the Gobi. So we traveled together. So we won, if I would like to, if I would have my suit finished, and then I would like to, and somehow talk to them and, activate it in some way. if it's going to be video or they have actually a very lovely gallery space called International Waters, and a very interesting place. So we need to talk.
That's an interesting question. That can a gallery also function in that way as a place which triggers something to be released or an idea to flood out?
Yeah.
For the benefit of the people who are listening, who haven't had an interaction with one of your suits before, could you also describe what they are, perhaps how they're made and where they come from?
Yeah, so there are very not many, but I made six of them so far. And so the first one was actually made as a sleeping bag, and then I used to, back in 2006 or something. So of course you know the Bogdan mountain that is near Ulaanbaatar, and then I found a cave, and then I placed someone to sleep in that suit, and then I've been filming with 16mm film. The cave was kind of kind of downwards. It's kind of kind of experimenting simply. One of the important suits I made in also in New York actually, that is it has two type of sides, and one side is has a like very gorilla or King Kong type of body, and another side it is a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So I put these two body patterns together into one suit in a way. That was actually, the idea was triggered at the Natural History Museum in New York, as I saw Tyrannosaurus Rex skull on display. And of course, a large raptor head, but from the back of the skull, you could see some kind of face that it looked quite like a monkey face to me, but I mean, in general, it quite looks as a monkey face. So in a way, I was also interested in this idea of a fact from one side, but from another side, it is a fictional King Kong's face, a certain. So it was actually in one object itself. So that's why I been making this suit as a antipode suit, called antipode suit, supposed to having fact and fiction in one, and then a person can enter in it, and it's kind of I'm not sure about the word shaman is very it comes and goes, but I don't really like to use that word, but there is of course the idea of the of a vehicle entering and exiting, if it's soul or body or human, or so this type of idea has been also part of my work. Another suit was made actually, the video actually I showed it in by Arts Catalyst. I made a crocodile. I also found in the library of the Natural History Museum that there were Russian and Mongolian paleontologists back in 1979, they've been doing expedition in Mongolia, in Gobi, trying to find dinosaur fossils, but they found fossils, there are many of them. By analyzing it, it become kind of a crocodile type of fossil. So I made that suit according to that idea. But also, I filmed in Gobi. I went to Gobi actually many times, I would say, in different places. It seems not necessarily very paleontological place. It seems like, in a way, kind of Mars or like other planet type of place. Yeah.
Can anybody, does it matter who gets into the suit?
Yeah.
Is it generally you or someone that you know, or who are the suits available for?
Yeah, in general, who is available? I mean, sometimes it used to be my son, sometimes, friends or family members. Sometimes, I mean, I work in very small, kind of team. So there are, so everybody needs to be a cook, a driver, a cameraman, or, everyone in a way. So that's why it doesn't really, I never train certain, or actually I never prepare for these things. I have just kind of idea of filming it and then, work with somebody who is available.
One of the reasons I think I find your work really compelling is, as I understand your process, if you're shooting a film like that, of course, you're activating work for the camera and it's a performance in that way. But through our previous conversations, I've always understood that something real is happening as well, that there's an experience that the person inside the suit is having, which might itself be generative of another layer of work. And again, like perhaps shamanism, the shamanic isn't the right language to use to refer to this, but shamanism is at once performative and yet very real because it has implications for the people who are experiencing or channeling. It's, it has this life-changing legacy in a way. Could you talk a little bit more about, what's happening at the same time as the filming? Or maybe just what's happened, what has happened to you in the past whilst you've been inside of one of these suits?
I think the antipod suit with that King Kong involved, I took it to Chile and also went with my son who was 7, I think, that time. And then that was actually a very memorable journey, I would say. And we did actually a lot of shooting, also a lot of traveling in different places. And because it's actually like many years ago now, I mean, seven years ago, it seems like it was a dream in a way. That was quite a good thing. As I entered the crocodile suit in Mongolia, it was more winter time, and the idea was actually I was supposed to sleep. So the most footage has been shot by drone, and of course drones have 15 minutes and sleep can, in the coldness, I don't know how fast you can go in sleep or how long it can take. The crocodile will kind of take care of your body temperature, but also in a way, like not long, in a way. So it was, again, an experiment where idea was actually a bit far from reality. And it's also very time-based experiment, I would say. Mongolia is quite windy place. So, I mean, the drone can film or not. It's also very depends on nature force in a way. But also the idea of how I can sleep that fast and maybe catch a like little of dream that could be very interesting for my project. And then how long I can actually lie down on a frozen ground. So it was yeah, also fact and fictional kind of idea, but not sure if I succeeded or not. That was actually quite, I tried to sleep in there multiple times, but I couldn't do it in a way. Another suit I made is actually not very visible because the work itself was a failure. I made a very large serpent suit, and then I also put into the river, and then I was imagining that like large serpent that is like 9 or 8, 9 meter long would naturally move with the stream of the water, and then it will look very natural, and it, you know, and then I could film that. But also put drone on there, and then also been trying to film it, but realized that the 8 meter piece of fabric soaked into water in the river, it becomes like unimaginable force in a way, and then I couldn't I was just simply fighting in the river just to pull this thing out, and filming was unsuccessful. I was just fighting with that in a way, with the monster in a way. It became monster through the water and through the stream, and I pulled it out. But also I learned kind of like, it's actually very interesting, not the result what I really want in terms of filming. It's actually, I always, of course, respect and think about nature force, but I if I feel it, it's actually very interesting, but it was very a good work to me, but it wasn't really done as a like visual work itself. I mean, I have some photographs after pulling this thing out of the river. So in a way, these suits are actually, of course, they might look good, or they might made out of certain idea, but some of them actually. In the nature, they able to become something or someone. I mean, it, and I realized that that's why I really like make these suits. Even if a person or artist or performer can activate it, or that suit is able to activate itself in some way. So I'm kind of searching this area. If it makes sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you first described that work as a failure, I suppose, from the perspective of the initial intention to create a film work. But actually, it sounds like something happened that wasn't a failure at all. Do you feel responsible as an artist to address certain issues? Or, sorry, my internet's a bit wonky. Hey, what do you feel are your key responsibilities as an artist working in the way that you do?
Yeah, I mean, I would say like last 7 years, I've been mostly, or maybe the last 3 years, I've been mostly working what I'm very interested in. And I think I see projects or art projects as an opportunity to not to make artwork as an artist, like standing before canvas and like just making art. I was always interested in idea if I would have certain information collected, visual information or audio information, I could follow it, or I can kind of like link them together in like right stream, and then it will kind of take in a way action itself. And then I can be not, I could be not artist making art. I would be more servant, serving to art projects. So it can become something very interesting. I was following the idea, that idea actually for very long. And I think that is quite, I see it as an opportunity because in very deep in me, I know I can do that. Or, you know, every place, every lot of things are very interesting. But I have to, in a way, kind of connect them, activate them in a way. And of course, it's not always successful because I try to be innovative or always try to search new things. I see art projects as opportunity.
This is maybe a challenging question to answer, but is it possible to define or approximate what it is that you feel like you're working in service of?
The artist before canvas was just an example. I like paintings. I don't paint. I mean, I admire paintings in general. Somehow, I mean, it seemed, of course, I think I did that before. If I like as an artist, you do your research, you do your and then you work on something. Recently, there is not really. My work shouldn't be really talking about certain issue or certain theme or should engage someone or should. I mean, there is not really any of those thoughts. Simply think about things, and then if I find interesting, it can really lead into something. Then I do it without any actually interests, and then they do. I mean, sometimes of course it fails, but sometimes they become something and interesting, and that's. That's my reason, also my purpose. It is actually very interesting to be a kind of person in mission. Then you just go on street. I mean, it's very far from reality, I guess. But it's you kind of like hunt or like investigate and then follow certain paths. And then sometimes you're very tired, but sometimes you're very happy. And then... they able become a monster in a way.
Interesting to hear you say it's like hunting. Yeah. I've been spending a lot of the last couple of years learning how to track and follow animals.
Yeah.
And there's something about that process which chimes with what you're saying, because the moment you think you know what you're doing or you assume that an animal has gone a certain way because it went that way before, or someone told you that like this means that, and you charge ahead, you lose it.
Yeah.
And you have to always be aware of the fact that each track will deliver its own message. You can't cheat the game. You can't jump ahead. You just have to respond to what it is that is literally in front of you and open up all of your senses. And then a pattern will emerge. And the pattern is, you know, sometimes it's visible, sometimes it's an intuition, it's a sense. It's also interesting because it's really different. And I've been thinking about this in my own work and writing, that model of research where you don't set out with a preformed hypothesis or even a notion of what it is you want or know you're going to make. It's so different to the standard model of scientific or social science research. And I know that, well, we got to know each other through the project that I organized called Five Heads, where you were collaborating with an anthropologist. And I just wondered, if you had any reflections on what it was like to engage with a researcher whose process was more scientific in that sense or occupied a different framework, and how the collaboration worked, because your methodologies are quite different.
I actually time to time keep meeting anthropologists or different, like very interesting scientists. And of course, I admire they, in a way, the way they work or the methodology in a way. Of course, it's all about, again, collecting data and mostly, and then in the winter time, when they need to hibernate in a way, they write their work in a way. So it's like always kind of this two climate type of work, field work, and then hibernating modus work. And I like that actually. And in some way, actually, in general, I like that idea because there are many like layers. They field trip layers of understanding, layers of communicating and establishing like a dialogue, and so on. And I think in my term, because I'm a very visual person, I see a lot of visual things. I dream visual. And also I imagine things in very, mostly in visual way. That's why I'm a visual artist, I guess. And in some way, society or people life, I'm not very interested, actually. If I go more to areas where I'm very interested, and then it seems like maybe not really where people gather together. It's I'm very interested in kind of like what is left or what is society actually producing in terms of not garbage. Right now, I'm interested in terms of how, in a way, the street dots or stains or chewing gum dots, how they start to become stains, and then how through the kind of walking of many people, they change the shapes and so on. I'm like, I think more interested in kind of trace of human or society, I guess, in this. So yeah, I mean, how to say, it's very hard actually. Yeah, I just keep following what I'm interested in. If you remember the falcon drawing.
Yes, describe the falcon drawing.
Yeah, that was actually, it started as a kind of like research, how many birds are captured each year and which areas, and then how they smuggled or exported to Arabic countries. So I was actually interested in that idea of kind of the diplomacy of countries, how they give them gifts to each other, or how they make possible endangered animal trade, and so on. But then I went, I knew one person who actually used to catch falcons, and then I visited some places, and I realized there was actually a connection between me and that bird. Or again, the visiting site was very interesting in terms of me as a walking person on the ground. I see the landscape differently as the bird, and then so kind of memorize this landscape as a human or imagine as a bird. So there is not, again, this type of shifting yourself into two different bodies in a way. I was actually very interested in a way, this type of connection. Again, there is, of course, that project has this story, but also it has about that specific species, but also it's about landscape, how the falcons, the flying creatures are exported in flying vehicles to another country. And then they will hunt for someone, but then after certain years, they will be released. So the question is if they come back to Mongolia or hang out around in Arabia. Or that was the idea of a bird scanning landscape in Mongolia, but then later in Arabia. It's also interesting, like how it, you know, a lot of things, I mean, happen in a way. So I'm very interested in, I would say, certain ideas that actually human activity in a way produce, but not necessarily in human itself.
Sometimes
in my mind right now.
Sometimes it helps to see ourselves or witness what human beings actually are by looking around the edges. Sometimes you have to aim indirectly in order to. Now that's the truism that comes from bow hunting, that the hunter has to aim upwards and sideways in order to hit the target.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you so much. It's just perfect timing. So thank you so much for sharing. That was amazing.
Okay.
This was Artery with Isa Caveggia, a podcast on art, authorship and anthropology, supported by the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Hope to speak with you again soon.